Welcome to All My Children Wear Fur Coats with Peggy Hoyt. Our goal is to keep loved pets in loving homes by educating pet parents about the importance of ensuring every pet has a forever home. For more information about creating a legacy for your pet or to listen to archive shows, visit animalcaretrustusa.org or legacyforyourpet.com. Join your host, author, estate planning attorney, and animal advocate, Peggy Hoyt.
Hello, pet lovers. Welcome to All My Children Wear Fur Coats. I'm your host, Peggy Hoyt, and this show is brought to you by the law offices of Hoyt and Bryan, where we create estate plans for pets and their people. Also brought to you by Animal Care Trust USA, a national nonprofit dedicated to keeping loved pets in loving homes. We do this by educating pet parents about the importance of getting a pet trust for their loved pet. We also provide pet trustee services. And today it is our pleasure to introduce to you our guest. Her name is Andrea Beal. She is the founder and CEO of EpiPaws. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to tell the listeners a little bit about you. So Andrea has a PhD in biology from Florida International University, where she focused on epigenetic biomarkers for marine organisms. She received a master's degree in biology from Texas Christian University, where she studied RNA and gene expression, and a bachelor's degree in biology, where she studied population genetics. She is a passionate animal lover and science lover, and she also loves to be outdoors in nature when she's not challenging herself with a scientific problem or starting a business. Sounds like we have a lot in common, Andrea.
Yep, always working too hard, huh?
Well, working hard, and when I'm not working, I'm also out in the woods. I'm usually on a horse doing a trail ride somewhere.
Oh, that's great.
So welcome to the show, and we're excited to hear all about EpiPaws and epigenetics, something I know nothing about. So tell me and tell our listeners exactly what is epigenetics.
Sure. So epigenetics, if we break down that word a little bit, it'll help us remember. Epi means above, and then genetics refers to the DNA code. So it's molecules that are interacting with the DNA sequence is what we're really looking at with epigenetics. And these molecules are interacting and determining what genes are turned on and off.
So those could be good genes or bad genes?
Yep, it can be good genes, bad genes. It also is accumulating in areas of the genome where it's not doing anything at all too.
So it could just be neutral.
Yep, and it could be neutral.
Okay, that's interesting to know. So when it comes to epigenetics and our pets, why do we care about that?
So we care about epigenetics in a health standpoint for any organism. Because it helps us understand how the organism is adapting to their environment and also can indicate or help us identify if a disease is developing. These epigenetic markers also play a key role in the actual aging process. And so as scientists, we're starting to view the aging process as a disease and something that we can manipulate and potentially increase the lifespan of organisms.
Including humans?
Including humans.
So I do represent a class of people who are life extensionists, if you will. And so I think they also view aging as a disease that maybe can be cured or curtailed at any rate.
Yes. Yeah.
So yes, a lot of scientific conversations around that topic for sure.
Oh yeah, the science of aging is a big topic right now.
So with regard to our pets, I know one of the things that every single pet owner has said in the past is, I wish my pet could live longer.
Yes.
And so with the work that you're doing, is that a possibility, ways that we can increase the lifespan of our pets?
Yes. So right off the bat, there are things that aren't too above and beyond what we normally do on a day-to-day basis, such as food and exercise, that epigenetics can actually just help us optimize. so that we are getting the longest, happiest, healthiest life possible. But then going above and beyond that, when we look at specifically manipulating this aging process and curtailing it, we look at actually making lifespans longer than they've ever been before.
So I'm curious, because I get the concept, but I don't understand exactly how we would do that manipulation.
So there's different ways. For us, honing in on certain ingredients in food is actually one way. That's a natural way that we could start to manipulate that aging process. It's just honing in on which ingredients and how much of it we have to do. It's probably going to be a mixture of that plus some other things, maybe certain exercise regimens or something else that goes along with it to actually move the needle on the lifespan. The other way is actually through pharmaceuticals and drugs. And there are other companies that are focused on that. Our focus is going to be on the all natural food side for pets.
Okay, I like that idea a lot, for all natural foods to manipulate the lifespan of our pets. So can you give us some examples of foods that might help do that?
So that we're still researching, and we're right now in the process of getting our biomarkers in place that help us understand which foods are the best to be feeding.
Okay, that's fair enough. So stay tuned, right, for that information to come out in
Absolutely.
The future. So when we were talking before the show, I mentioned that I have a little dog that I don't know exactly how old he is. And tell us why it's important to know how old our animals are.
Yeah, so knowing the actual age of your pet tells you something even bigger than just that number. It's the life stage that pet is in. So with dogs, we have puppies, young adults, mature adults, seniors, and then we have a geriatric stage or end of life stage. With cats, you have the same categories: kitten, young adult, mature adult, senior, and geriatric. And which life stage that pet is in dictates how they should be fed, how they should be exercised. And maybe importantly for healthcare purposes, it tells your vet a lot about what things should be tested for and how often and what something might mean. So if a new symptom occurs, it might mean two different things. If you're looking at a really young animal and they have, I don't know, say a cough or something, it might mean something different to that young animal than if it's an old animal. They might be more worried about this cough that popped up out of nowhere. Just for an example, I don't know if cough would really be.
Yeah, interesting you should choose that example though, because I've been at the vet twice in the last 2 weeks for a 9-year-old cat who has a cough. And he went back in today for his checkup, and he's been on a regimen of steroids and antibiotics for the last 2 weeks. And I've actually seen an improvement in the fact that he hasn't been coughing so much. However, when they did the follow-up x-ray today, the x-ray actually shows that his condition has worsened. So for a 9-year-old cat, I'm wondering, is that like the mature stage, or would that be a senior stage? Do you know?
I want to say, actually, I have a little, let me see if I have my window open for it. I don't remember for 9. That's like right on the cusp of being either or. So I actually use aha.org for a lot of this information. It's where I send my customers. So in my age reports that I give when I do an age estimate, I tell them about AHA, American Association of Animal Hospitals, something, I think I messed that acronym up. But they have all the life stage information for different pets. So,
okay, that's good to know. Well, and one of the things that our listeners can do if they are interested is that they can actually order a pet age test kit.
Yes. So the pet age test kit, it's for dogs and cats. It estimates age using a mouth swab. So it's something that if you order it online, we send you the kit in the mail. You swab, package it up, mail it back to us, and we send it off to our lab, our partner lab, for sequencing. And then we give you your age result, along with some insights on what life stage that pet is in and things you can do.
Okay, excellent. Well, I think there are a lot of us out there that maybe don't know exactly how old our pets are because we've adopted them as an older pet and we didn't have the privilege of having them since they were babies. A lot of my pets were babies when I got them, but a lot of them weren't. So I'm curious too, because I'm a horse lover. Does this pet age kit also work for horses?
It will someday. That's actually the next test we want to produce is a horse age estimation test. We're also looking at doing one for birds. Horse is going to come next, though. That's the one I'd like to do next.
Okay, so birds, that's a really good one, too, because I bet most birds people don't know how old they are.
Yeah, and they get passed down through the family, so they definitely need a will or need to be put into the will.
And a will that comes with a pet age test kit, I think. Definitely. Okay, so I get this pet age test. I now know, you know, what stage of life my pet is in. You've given me some suggestions. Maybe I have an idea about the epigenetics for my animal at that point. Is the epigenetics test something that needs to be done periodically to see how things are changing?
So our next test that we are developing, that will be the case. So with the pet age test that's currently on the market, that's a one-time test to just estimate what we call chronological age. So how old that pet really physically is. So we give a suggested birthday along with that. With the next product we're developing in which people can give their pets DNA to participate in this research and get some free insights through the study is a biological age. This is how old the pet seems for their age. And so with this, it is beneficial to keep measuring. Because your biological age and how old you seem or how fast you're aging, that's the part that we can manipulate. So if someone has a five-year-old pet, we get a biological age score of 7, let's say, so they're a little unhealthy, they're aging quickly for their age. We can start looking at different environmental aspects, such as food, exercise, what pharmaceuticals are they on? Is there something stressing them out every day? And make changes to that environment. And then we can remeasure the marks and see if we've made a dent in that aging process and if we've been able to bring it closer to their actual age. Or even, here's the fun part, we can make them look younger for their age than they are. And that's where we get into that longevity.
Okay, I think that's great. I remember maybe years ago taking a little quiz in some magazine somewhere like, what's your biological age versus your chronological age? And they were just making guesstimates, I guess, based on lifestyle factors.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about. The biological age is taking into account those environmental factors and how the environment has affected the health of the individual.
Okay, so very sciencey, scientific stuff. And I want to know how you got interested in all of this.
Yeah. So while I was in school and I was actually pre-med, I was really into science. I always loved science. And somewhere along the way, you know, I just realized that I didn't want to be a caregiver. I preferred to be the scientist. And I went down that science route. So fast forward to, you know, I went through undergrad, I went through a master's program all in the sciences, and I get to my PhD, right? And here I discover epigenetics, and I'm learning about epigenetics and just falling in love with the science. It's a new field. There's so much to discover, and there's so much potential with how it tells us how the environment affects organisms for it to help with identifying disease, helping us curtail disease, things like that. And so I was studying epigenetics in marine organisms, actually, and developing tools for conservation biology. And I developed an age estimation test for dolphins. And I was working on transferring it, the technology to create an age test for sharks. And then I wanted people to actually use this technology. A frustration I had as a scientist was I see all these papers and studies and discoveries, and then that technology doesn't get used in real life to make an impact. It takes a very long time for it to get from academia into the real world sometimes. And one of the best ways to get it into the real world is to actually start a business and commercialize the research and make it readily and easily available to the end consumer that should be using it. And so I went to my business suite at my university, and they started helping me figure out how to formulate a real company around this science. And we kind of landed on, you know, there's a big opportunity for pets. And then I love the idea because I've always had lots of pets. I've had dogs. My brother has 3 cats. We're always dealing with health issues. And actually, I saw a need with my own pets. They were aging and I was being blindsided by illness. You know, we take them to a vet all the time and still, you know, 1 week they're fine, 3 weeks they're not. I knew that epigenetics is going to be the solution for this. So that was kind of where the idea of the company came from, was seeing that, hey, you know, there's even a need for an age test, which I knew how to produce really fast, is the chronological age test. So I was like, well, there we go. We can go ahead and get a product out right away, get some revenue, and start working towards the real big impact, which will be the biological age test.
That's really cool. Because although you started with dolphins and sharks, I don't know very many people who have any dolphins or sharks, right?
Yep, that was my problem.
But I do know lots of people who have dogs and cats and horses and birds. So I see where that was a really good decision from a marketing standpoint. So to be able to be recognized in your field for something that is so groundbreaking, but taking it out of the marine science area into the pet science area.
Yep.
So congratulations for doing that.
Thank you.
So what was your PhD thesis on then?
So it was centered around using epigenetics to create tools for conservation biology.
Okay.
Some of the other projects I did were centered around seeing how the environment impacted the epigenetic markers. So I was kind of diving into that. But with these organisms, I did that with sharks. And with sharks, it's a little bit harder to make, you know, firm conclusions due to some lacking details in the genetics that we're still working on. So it's going to be much more exciting to be studying this in cats and dogs where we have better genetic references to look at.
Well, and access to a lot more subjects for study, right?
Yes, it's much easier to get some samples from cats and dogs. And I've started my own study. That was how everything kind of started with this, was just going to events and asking for samples from pet owners for research. And they were gladly giving me a swab of their dog's cheek. So I have close to probably 300 samples by now. Of just research participants willing to give DNA samples for this research we're doing.
Well, you can volunteer all of mine if you want them.
Oh, yes. I will take them. I'll send you swabs.
Absolutely. Well, between 6 dogs, 2 cats, and 4 horses, that'll give you a few to get started with.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely need those horses if I'm going to create this new age.
Yeah, so that would be very cool because I have two full-size horses and then 2 miniature horses. So it'd be interesting to see if there's a difference between the minis and the full-size horses too.
Yeah, no, that is something I definitely need to, I didn't even think about that yet. Horses are a little bit more far removed.
Yeah.
My husband's mom used to have horses when we were growing up. So I've been around them, but they're foreign to me.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you'd have minis, then you'd have ponies, then you'd have horses, then you'd have the draft breeds, which are the, you know, the super large. So that'd be very interesting.
Oh yeah.
If I was still young and in school, that might be something I could be interested in as well from a science perspective.
Yeah.
So, but I'm also interested in learning more about how your organization is partnering with shelters and rescues.
Yeah. So right now we're kind of on a mission to try and work with shelters and rescues. And one of the ways that we're doing that is having them become affiliates of ours so that they tell people about the age test, and then they generate commissions off of all the tests that get sold. That way they get a piece of the pie, because we'd love to help them and help in that area. But as a young company, we just don't have money to donate to them ourselves. So, you know, they have all the perfect customers coming to them and adopting these animals with unknown ages. So we're trying to partner with them.
Absolutely. I can see where that would be a great partnership, because as many animals as I've adopted in my lifetime, it would be lovely to have known about how old some of them were. I adopted one dog as a senior. She was probably 11 or 12 when I adopted her. So yeah, that would have been great to know if she was really 11 or 12, or if she was younger or older. And I know you said that the pet age test can pinpoint from in about a 1 year time frame. So we're really looking at people not that necessarily know how old their pet is within a year, but something if we think maybe 2, 3, 4 years, or we just don't have a clue at all.
Yes, and that's important about the test, is that our accuracy, we're estimating within a year of the actual age of the pet. So if someone had a pet as a puppy and they're just not sure if they were 3 or 5 months, we're not really going to help there with the age test. It's not that, you know, it can't pinpoint that accurately. But for someone who's just like, I don't know if this pet is 3 or 6, there's a big help right there. We can help determine and hone in, you know, which is it.
That's great. I can't believe that people wouldn't want to know that information about their pets. And then, so talk to us about the research opportunities that people have with you, because I know you can go on your site and at epipaws.com and register under the research portion.
Yep. So anyone can participate in the study, and we're actively looking for dogs and cats. We have a lot of dogs, and we're still accepting more dogs because we need lots of samples, but we're in particular looking for cats. So if someone's listening and you have a cat, it'd be really great if you could join our research and give a cat sample. That's where we're really lacking. The other thing, and it's really easy to register. Yeah, you go to epipaws.com and you navigate to the research page. And then you just register your pet. It'll be a short Google survey. And then we don't reach out right away, but we'll eventually come around to all our participants and ask for those DNA samples, which will be a mouse swab that we'll mail to you. Another ask on the samples is older pets. We're in need of older pets and pets that might have a disease or illness. Those are very valuable to us to help us hone in on if we can help identify those diseases earlier. And if we can, and down the road, if we can do something about those diseases and treat diseases using epigenetics.
Excellent. I have one of my dogs registered in the Dog Aging Project. Have you heard of that?
Yes, that's amazing. That's good. We are talking to the Dog Aging Project as well to collaborate with them on getting samples. And that's great. I'm hoping that down the road, as we get bigger, that maybe we can solidify a bigger collaboration with samples, so that when people apply for one of the projects, they don't have to double apply also for our project. But, you know, we're a little ways away from that, I think, but we'll get there someday.
Well, I know a couple of cat rescues, so it could probably get you a lot of cat samples.
Oh, yes, that would be awesome.
All right. Well, very, very interesting stuff that our listeners should really just be going, oh my gosh, I didn't even know any of this existed, because I didn't. And I always try to stay kind of on the cutting edge of what's happening. But congratulations to you and your company and all the wonderful things that you're doing for pets. What would you want to leave us with today, Andrea?
So I think that I'd like to leave with everyone to keep an eye on our research, definitely join our research, It's going to take a lot of samples to get to where we want to be and understanding how these different environmental factors affect health. And we're very eager to learn more about it so that our pets can live happier, healthier, and longer lives if possible.
Well, and I saw one thing on your website I wanted to ask about too. Talking about outside stimuli that can affect, that are detected by the body and then can cause epigenetic changes or modifications. And one of the things that you mentioned was the BPA in plastics.
Oh, yeah. So there are several chemicals in the environment that can affect. And that's something that we'd like to look into is, you know, what's the true effect of BPA on DNA methylation and if that ties into any disease development. We do know that there are studies, real classic studies, where we see, especially during pregnancy, that BPA exposure does have an effect on DNA methylation, which has downstream effects on the offspring, that it's just all around health and weight gain, and whether or not those DNA methylation marks are present at certain genes where they need to be.
Well, and I noticed too that you talk about childhood abuse or other forms of trauma that can also affect DNA methylation. Do you think that that could also be true if a pet is subjected or an animal is subjected to abuse or trauma?
Yes, absolutely. That is something. So with epigenetics, there's a huge movement towards better understanding what can be passed on to the next generation. And part of that is social things, abuse. If a parent was abused, and then they had children after the abuse had happened, there's sometimes a mark that can get passed along with onto the offspring. So it gets inherited. We don't know a whole lot about that yet, but there's some good human studies, actually. A lot of what we know about epigenetics is coming out of the human healthcare. And it's bits and pieces. And a lot of it's actually from twin studies as well, because we have two identical genetic humans to, you know, compare their DNA methylation or other epigenetic marks that they might have.
Yeah, that would be really interesting because there are a lot of interesting twin studies out there for sure. I never would have thought about abuse as being one of those things, but if that comes to pass to be a real thing, that's going to be quite dramatic, I think, in the world of science.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's a lot, like epigenetics plays a huge role in mental disorders and things like that. And so I think my prediction is that, you know, the more we learn about these epigenetic marks, the more progress we're going to make with mental disorders. I think we have a new era coming on us that's going to be great and help a lot of people who have those mental diseases.
Well, and especially in an era where we maybe have a lot of chemically created street drugs, if you will, that if they're being used by young people and teenagers and young adults that will later then go on to have children. And if that does have the effect of changing their DNA methylation, that could be very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
We're seeing a lot higher incidence, I think, of mental health issues and not just related to the pandemic, but maybe that could be considered a trauma event. Who knows?
For some people, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm hooked. You've got me hooked on this science that I didn't know anything about until today. So thank you for that. something else to think about, right?
Yeah, it is. Epigenetics is really interesting and it's applicable to so many things, from food to mental health to exercising to how long you're going to live. It just applies to so much, even in conjunction with other areas of science. Like right now, we're looking to try and partner with some of the microbiome companies and do some cross studies there, because the microbiome, like a gut microbiome, affects the whole entire organism. And then that also crosstalks with epigenetics. So it's a whole ecosystem picture that we want to get a hold of.
There's a lot of interesting people out there for you to partner with, I think, Andrea.
Yes, yes, definitely.
We've had the microbiome people on the show as well. So that,
Holly.
Yeah, that was very interesting. So if people are listening and you go, oh, I missed that show, you could go back and listen to that one too. So, yeah. So yeah, stay tuned for all the wonderful things. Well, we will definitely check back with you in the future to see where we are, but also recommend our clients and listeners to check out epipause.com and see what you don't know about epigenetics and maybe getting your pet tested for its age. And thank you to Andrea and her team, and thank you for being passionate about this area of science.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. So to our listeners, you know my motto, until there are none, please adopt one. And until next time, happy tales.
Thank you for joining us on All My Children Wear Fur Coats with your host, Peggy Hoyt. We hope you learned something valuable for the benefit of your pet. We want to keep loved pets in loving homes by educating pet parents about the importance of ensuring every pet has a forever home. Get more information about creating a legacy for your pet at animalcaretrustusa.org or legacyforyourpet.com. Buy a copy of All My Children Wear Fur Coats, How to Leave a Legacy for Your Pet on Amazon. Join our email list or make a donation. Pet professionals and advisors are invited to join our trusted advisor network. Until next time, happy tales!